We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, and you're very welcome to RTE News' Your Politics Podcast. I'm Paul Cunningham. For the next 20 minutes or so, we'll be bringing you the stories behind the headlines. What exactly is going on at Leinster House? Joining me once again is our political correspondent, Micheál Lehane. Good evening.
Good evening.
And we're also joined by Sandra Hurley of our political staff. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Paul.
We're going to start off with the money. We've got a story of people who might get some money and then people who definitely did get money, and that ended up being something of a controversy. Let's start on the second one. The first one. We're talking about student nurses and a huge row in the Dáil, which is run for a week, in which government parties, we've heard, are deeply unhappy about how the whole thing has trundled along. Tell us more.
Yeah, I think the government has totally been on the back foot on this. It's been totally on the defensive, and it's a really hard line to hold that they haven't been paying student nurses, all of them. It's only been the fourth years who have been paid. And the opposition have been pushing it and pushing it. Sinn Féin have brought it up at Leaders' Questions, I think, is it three times this week? So they know that the government is vulnerable on this. And we know that it's been really strongly criticised internally within the parties as well, but in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, because they're really unhappy with how the government has handled the whole thing, that they haven't explained their position well. And then, unfortunately, something else added a bit of fuel to the fire earlier this week, because it was revealed that what came out of Tuesday's cabinet meeting was that the government had approved pay restoration for judges. Now, the defence from the government was that they had to do this. In fact, it was in line with the 2% increase for all public servants. Judges' pay is aligned to that. And judges had, in fact, been getting it since October, but the order was sort of approved at cabinet on Tuesday. Also, there was pension restoration for higher paid civil servants. So the timing could not be worse. It was really deeply awkward, and the opposition have been drawing the two together.
And it sort of dates back to the motion brought by People Before Profit, once again highlighting that these were the people, these student nurses, who we were applauding only a few months back. And now, as we roll up to Christmas, we're slapping in the face. That's quite a powerful argument. How did you feel Leo Varadkar did today in the Dáil when he was taking leaders' questions? Because just the previous night, as Sandra said, the TDs within his own party were letting him know that things had not gone well at all from a communication front.
Yeah, he spoke about what he said were five kind of uncontested facts around this. The fact that student nurses in their first 3 years don't get paid a wage because the decision was taken several years ago now to make student nurse training a degree course. So he said, just like teachers, the emphasis is not on payment. And try to say too that when it comes to a private member's motion going before the Dáil, like the one last week, that's really set a light on this entire debate, that doesn't actually change things when it comes to paying anybody, that it's negotiations with unions where things are done. I think, though, a central part of the problem for the government was that view of that motion that was put down by People Before Profit. They thought it was simply enough to table an amendment and win it. They were never going to lose that vote. But they lost a lot. They lost a lot of public support because of, as Sandra said, the way the debate was defined from there on in. And there always seemed to be a clear political rule around here. And it's kind of shocking to think the government didn't have a sense of this when it came to nurses. That was the one group in society that government could never seem to be unfair to. And if there was ever a time where that was even more relevant, it was in the aftermath and during this pandemic. So it seems strange then that they were so tone deaf to it. And that is the view, particularly in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And yes, things have changed today because the health minister is saying, well, that review that I spoke about, that's going to be done really quickly now, and there will be, he strongly suggested, increased allowances for student nurses in January. The Taoiseach are taking a different approach, saying, yes, that's happening, but that there could be something else as well when it comes to student nurses having to do the work of staff nurses acting up officially in that position. Well, then they could be paid for that. That happens with substitute teachers as well. And I suppose then the third point along the way, this kind of surprise at government level, the student nurses are doing so much in their first, second and third year in hospitals, but the testimony is coming in from hundreds and hundreds of those student nurses that they are doing everything that that a fully trained nurse would be doing, whether that's holding the hands of people who are dying or providing assistance in all those kind of areas in a hospital, and yet they're not being paid for. There's, the government have explained the reason for that, that it is to do with training and degree courses, but they were on the back foot for the week.
Okay, so if we sort of go back to the beginning, we've got a short-term review which relates to student nurses in COVID-19 situations with the possibility of them getting some cash in January.
We've got a quick.
And then you've got a second, more substantial review, which means we don't have a deadline for that, but that could also mean more allowances and more income for nurses.
And you would think the acting up position then, if you're doing the job of a senior nurse on a given day, that's where that might come into the more longer term review.
And then we've got the director of nursing being mandated by the minister to look into this issue of student nurses doing more than they're supposed to, something that Micheál Martin described as exploitation, something needed to be dealt with if it happened. So if that is the push, Sandra, the government's answer to the past week, which has been a bad week, is that going to be enough to get them out of jail?
I asked the question when this short-term review, when that was actually initiated, because that longer-term review, which the Thánaiste spoke about last week, we know that that's expected in September. That's looking at kind of the broader picture about how student nurses' allowances, that short-term review in relation to COVID. I didn't get an answer from the Department of Health, but I wonder when that was initiated, because it looks like that was perhaps kicked in on the back of all this controversy. Minister for Health told the Dáil today that there would be something on that in January.
If the unions agreed.
Yes.
There was buy-in from the trade unions.
Yes, exactly. So it looks like they're on the back foot, and that because last week we heard that there was going to be nothing until September. That's what Leo Varadkar told the Dáil, I think it was last Thursday. Today we're hearing that actually there's going to be something in January. So it does have the appearance of the government reaching to do something faster, something specific to COVID, which has been what this has all been about anyway in relation to the pandemic, and that is going to kick in January. So it does look like they are reacting on that front. A broader point, I suppose, being made today as well by Leo Varadkar about this issue, about the fact that in recent years, nursing has moved from being seen as something of an apprenticeship to a degree course, and that they don't want to go back on that. So they do need to get buy-in from the unions about how they do that, because they don't just want them to become paid workers. But certainly it looks like the government has had to dig in and get something moving on this quickly.
Yeah. One last question on this and then we'll move on. As you mentioned earlier on, Micheál, it was the testimony which was being read out by Piers Doherty of Sinn Féin or by Richard Boyd Barrett of People Before Profit, in which individual student nurses were relating what they were doing, the extent of their work doing, helping a mother who just had lost her child, unsupervised work with COVID patients, and then going off to study and then coming back on for a 12-hour shift. It was a pretty stark image that was being portrayed.
And the view consistently expressed that these are the people that are keeping the system going because it is so overstretched. And of course, that shows you that when the pandemic goes away, kind of that residual problem in the Irish political system of an overstretched health system. After all, it was a no confidence motion in the last health minister. That was the trigger point that led to the election in the early part of this year. All those problems still remain, and it typifies that. I suppose what was different here as well, though, is that while these student nurses had to work harder than ever before, were faced with an unprecedented situation, they also couldn't do any other work outside of their studies. So that income was denied to them as well. Government saying that they were eligible for the pandemic unemployment payment where that was relevant, where that applied, though.
Okay. We're sticking with the issue of vaccines. One of our colleagues, Barry Lenehan, has been undertaking a very interesting study, and that relates to members of the Oireachtas, their views on vaccines and whether or not they're going to roll up their arm. Barry, tell us more about what your study was about and what you found.
Yeah, so essentially, Paul, we asked all 160 TDs in Dáil Éireann, including, of course, the Ceann Comhairle Seán Ó Fáil, whether they're happy to take the coronavirus vaccine when it becomes first available to them. And of course, they were keen to stress that priority groups should get the vaccine first, that no political favours should be at play here. But of the 160 TDs, 144 said they would take the jab, 3 said they wouldn't take the vaccine, and 2 are undecided, while 11 didn't respond. So that gives you a response rate of 93% to the survey. And when you strip out those who didn't reply yes or no, you're left then with this statistic that 96.6% of TDs in Dáil Éireann are in favour of getting the coronavirus vaccine. And that's a high number. It's a significant number as well. If you look at the figures from Red Sea and Ireland Thinks in recent weeks in relation to the members of the general public who are intent on getting the coronavirus vaccine, that figure around 70%. So an endorsement in relation to those TDs getting the vaccine. Now, 3.3% say they won't take the vaccine or are undecided. And the three who won't, they're three independent deputies, three rural independent deputies, Tipperary's Matty McGrath. He said he fears the jab is being rushed through. He'd concerns around vaccines generally, he said. You Cork South West's Michael Collins. He said, and I quote, "Whenever anyone asks me whether I'll take the vaccine, I respond, what are the ingredients? And they don't know. And I say, well, there's my point." And he claimed that he'd spoken to people of all ages who have grave concerns around the coronavirus vaccine. While on RT Radio earlier on, we heard from the Limerick independent TD Richard O'Donoghue. He says he's never taken the flu vaccine in his life, and at the moment he won't be taking the coronavirus vaccine. He gave a litany of reasons for this, including the fact that the state is indemnifying those providing the vaccine. He says this is worrying for him, and he claims that even though our survey, our research shows that 96% of TDs will take the coronavirus jab, he says this isn't the case from those he's spoken to in the corridors of Leinster House or the Convention Centre, saying you could line up all the TDs and see how many would take it then, and you see it wouldn't be as high. You have two undecideds there, Roscommon's Michael Fitzmaurice, saying he's waiting for the experts to examine all the data, and also Clare Michael McNamara. Remember, he was the chair of the influential COVID committee, and he says it hasn't been approved yet. But the eminent medical expert, Gabriel Scally, he criticised those who say they aren't going to take the jab, saying that many of their concerns could be, ramified by a simple Google search.
I suppose the main headline coming out of your study is just the sheer numbers who are going to take it, and it would seem to suggest that from TDs at least, they see themselves in some form of leadership role, and that they're going to try and ensure as many people as possible get the vaccine.
Yes, and in particular, if you look at, say, Sinn Féin, 36 of the 37 TDs responded there. They say all 36 said they intended to take the vaccine. And that, of course, is off the back of that Ireland Thinks poll last week, which showed 55% of Sinn Féin voters intended to get the jab. So this obviously much higher than that number. Nearly all the TDs saying they would get the vaccine, including several first-time TDs, such as Thomas Gould, Raida Cronin, and also Clare's Violet Ann Wynne, who had previously made controversial comments about vaccines, which she later retracted. Fianna Fáil, 35 of those 37 TDs saying they'd take the jab as well. And Fine Gael as well, strong support there. 29 of the 35 who got back to me, including John Paul Phelan, the Carlow Kilkenny TD. You'll recall he'd be one of the first to get the jab as he suffered a heart attack over the summer. So he would be high priority. But the TDs saying, yes, this is a leadership a role, as you say, Paul. The Labour TDs, for instance, Sean Sherlock and Duncan Smith, they telling me that yes, they're anticipating concerns around there because of the speed at which these vaccinations are coming to the fore, but they will take it upon themselves to express those concerns. And of course, the Labour leader, Alan Kelly, asking all TDs to sign a vaccine pledge to fight against misinformation, okay, to fight against anti-vaccines. But of course, that just a few hours before his unfortunate mishap this week.
Very interesting. Thanks very much, Barry Lenihan, for joining us with that particular survey. Vaccines, it's important. Tomorrow we're due to have a report being sent to government in relation to the rollout of these vaccines, the logistics about how it's going to be done, from Professor Brian McCrae. But the Tánaiste in the Dáil today was saying it wasn't clear if you were going to find out all the detail about that tomorrow, or it could be next week.
Yeah, it looks like Tuesday before the full detail of the logistics. But I suppose a lot of it already revealed, although the Tánaiste is saying too that it is subject to change. You could see that priority group as defined, especially I suppose further down the list, people could move up and down that a bit. But it's people over 65 in care homes are the first group that are going to get the vaccine.
From your point of view, we've been talking about this rollout issue. We had all sorts of concerns being raised by the opposition. Everyone's saying we're behind you, but they had questions about things like, for example, do we have sort of the digital backup to be able to roll this out and ensure everyone's contacted, and if there's going to be second jabs required depending on the vaccine. What's the feeling now in Leinster House about this, or is it just a question of waiting for the McCrae report and learning from that?
I think there's concerns about the record keeping as well. Maybe the state in general hasn't got a great record, as it were, in setting up these types of databases. There doesn't seem to be something in place that can be appropriated easily. And in the past, when organisations have done that, it tends to be expensive. But the problem is we need to get this done very quickly. So there is concerns about that. In terms of the prioritisation, obviously, there's also concerns in some of the unions have raised about workers, say retail workers, that they should be higher. Roisin Shortall raised a concern as well about today about people under 18 with an underlying health condition. She said they should be higher up the list as well. So there are some issues still outstanding on all of this.
Sandra Hurley of our political staff, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. She has to bail on us in the middle of the podcast. But nonetheless, Micheál, I just wanted to bring you back to another row, which is just erupting, and it comes from the Public Petitions Committee, yes, which has a Sinn Féin
chair. Don't
forget
the Public Petitions Committee.
And that was my first question, which is, what does the Public Petitions Committee actually do? Because I'm not sure so many people would know about it.
Public Petitions Committee is in some ways not to be dismissive at all of it, because it's an important committee and something that kind of connects Leinster House with the outside world. But in some ways, it's the letters to the editor committee. It's people writing in and making petitions on certain issues and getting to address committees that mightn't otherwise have got to do so. And it does have a degree of clout in that it can make recommendations and publish reports. But that said, the very first meeting in each Dáil of the Public Petitions Committee isn't one that typically would have a large number of people watching, especially when they're just there to try and define their terms of reference. But this one did, because the Sinn Féin TD, Martin Brown, speaking on TIP FM yesterday,
was the chair of the committee,
spoke about the Brian Stanley issue and also said, on a more general note, he felt that Sinn Féin TDs had to stop apologising for the past. And it was those remarks in particular that the Deputy Government Whip, Brendan Griffin, and former Minister Owen Murphy wanted clarified, and they wanted statements on it when that committee held its very first meeting here in Leinster House in the last hour or so.
In other words, they wanted Deputy Brown to explain himself.
Yes, they said in the public interest, given that this is a committee that's all about public confidence and making links with the public, that those statements had to be clarified. They were backed by Senator Jerry Buttermer of Fine Gael, in what looked like a fairly well thought out approach as Martin Brown took the chair to try and chair that first meeting. Eugene Murphy of Fianna Fáil backed them. Ultimately, the chairperson, a little taken aback, on the back foot, said this wasn't on the agenda, and he tried to several times to get the meeting to go into what they call private session, to turn off the cameras. That was resisted. It went to a vote, and in the end the meeting had to be adjourned because they couldn't be in agreement. So what you have now is a request from the government parties on another Sinn Féin TD to explain his comments about the past.
And we saw in a statement just in the past moment or so that Deputy Brown has said that he's very disappointed with what Fine Gael is doing at the committee level, and that he feels at a more general level that we need to move on. It sounded a little bit of an echo of a Sinn Féin critique of what they used to term the politics of condemnation. It's now the politics of apologising.
Yeah, and I suppose Sinn Féin, the heat around Brian Stanley in some ways was off this week, that he was going to come back into the Dáil next week and make a statement. Now you have a request on another Sinn Féin TD to make a statement. It does show, though, I haven't seen a problem with a committee chairperson and a nature of a political manoeuvre like that before, that the polarisation of the government side with the biggest opposition party, when it's coming down to the functioning of what is one of the lesser known Dáil committees, that shows that the extent of polarisation, I think.
Yeah, so we have seen an awful lot over the recent months of these battles between Sinn Féin and Fine Gael, and it looks set to continue next week as well. But there is an issue where there is some form of unity between the opposition parties and government, and that is, once again, the issue of Brexit. We seem to be on
neat,
the cusp.
Paul, very neat.
Thank you. It seems to be we're on the cusp. We keep saying this every week. On the cusp of, you know, the final straight, the last turn, the final hours, whatever you want to call it. David Murphy, our political assignments editor, has joined us. Where are we standing? We've got a Sunday deadline, or is it?
Well, that's the whole thing. So what they're trying to do is put a bit of shape on this and decide on Sunday what's going to happen? Is there going to be a deal? Is there not going to be a deal? We've got to bear in mind that if there is a deal, there's a 600-page document which is going to have to be translated into each language used in the European Union, and that will go forward to the European Parliament for its imprimatur on the 28th of December.
I think they could do that now.
Well,
don't have to wait.
However, what's happened this week, I think the big theme is, for the first time, the Irish government are coming out and saying it's 50-50 as to whether or not there's going to be a deal. And privately, some ministers are saying for the first time they see a real prospect of a potential no-deal scenario. And suddenly all the preparations that have been getting underway over the past 4 years for a potential no deal have a look of reality about them. And we have a big piece of legislation commonly known as Bob. In fact, it's called the Brexit Omnibus Bill, which has been through the Oireachtas, which is essentially sets a lot of the groundwork for a no deal scenario. Also, a memo which has been brought to Cabinet, as Micheál was talking about earlier during the week, it's been brought to Cabinet 8 times, Simon Coveney's Brexit memo. People are beginning to look at that and think, OK, what exactly does this mean in practical terms? So what's going to happen? And suddenly, I think if you step back from the politics of it, what's been happening this week is we've seen a number of agreements to make life a bit easier around the border, to ensure the British government ensuring that there isn't going to be a border between the south and the north of Ireland. And I think that's been positively received here.
The Irish Protocol, the bulletproof Irish Protocol.
The bulletproof Irish Protocol. However, if there is a no deal, the real key issue for Irish producers of foodstuffs, Irish companies, Irish farmers, is that tariffs would kick in under World Trade Organization rules. In some cases, those tariffs, particularly on beef, can be in excess of 30%. So suddenly Irish farmers who are producing in excess of 6 billion euro of beef and selling that into the British market would find their produce becoming suddenly more expensive. So what's going to be the effect of that? And while things may have been sorted out between the north of Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, it's now really looking at the produce of the Republic of Ireland and how it's going to be sold into the island of Britain being a key problem.
We've spoken an awful lot about the question of these tariffs coming in, the question of cost. We've focused on the land bridge and the question of, you know, getting stuff between one place and another. But that's only part of the story, because if things go down the tubes, there's always chance for the vindictive side to come out, for you to do something, you're the UK, and then me to retaliate, me the EU, and then the other side to say, well, if you're going to do that, I'm going to do this. I mean, this has the potential to get really, really nasty. Can you give us some insight into what could happen, to how the could trade blows?
Well, I think the first flashpoint is going to be fisheries. Which boats are going to be allowed into British waters and what's going to be done in exchange? Now, if we see that perhaps European boats aren't allowed into British waters, then immediately the EU can turn around and say, well, look, if we don't get access to those waters, will we be giving you access to the European energy market? And that's where you could see a kind of an escalation in terms of tit for tat in a sort of a trade war situation. I don't think anybody wants to see that. And the next question is, if there isn't going to be a deal, what is the Irish government going to do? Is it going to have to take further measures to protect the economy?
Micheál, if I can bring you in here, just the atmosphere in Leinster House is still one which is sort of slightly Christmassy. The holidays aren't too far away, rather than we're on the edge of Armageddon.
Absolutely. There's the huge Christmas tree as you walk in the door of Leinster House, and there is an end of season feel to the place, definitely. And there's a calmness about Leinster House. At the same time, it doesn't take too much scratching of the surface to find people knowing clearly that there is a realisation and a distinct possibility that the sky could fall in very soon. But if you were to just weigh up the odds in it at the moment, I think more than 50% of people around here, possibly a good bit more, still think that in the end there will be a deal Sunday or soon after that. But there is worry in particular about the fact that those gaps between the sides at the negotiations haven't narrowed at all, and that they are considerable. This isn't following a traditional pattern of a union negotiation around here, where at least some incremental progress would have been made over the last few days. That hasn't happened, so an enormous chasm will have to be bridged at the last minute.
If I would make one prediction, it probably is that the hard Sunday deadline isn't hard, and and that it will at least bleed into Monday. And then who knows what, if it'll drift a little bit further. We're extending our podcast a little bit beyond what we usually do. But just to get in a couple of quick points. David, one of the things I suppose to watch is, because we used to talk about it 10 years ago all the time, watch the money markets. What are they telling us at the moment?
Well, you know, they're a bit like everybody else, which is slightly comforting because they just don't know. But the reality is that one way to look at this is what's happening sterling. And sterling over the past 2 weeks has weakened. So we were at a point where 1 euro equaled 89 pence sterling. And now it's 1 euro equals 91 pence sterling. So you can see sterling is getting slightly weaker. It's not at the point where you'd say the markets think there's going to be no deal. It's not at that point yet. If there is going to be no deal, we'd expect to have a dramatic weakening of sterling potentially on Monday morning. But we've got to look back to 2016 when 1 euro equaled 76 pence and we're now at 91. And 2016 was just before they voted for Britain to leave the EU. And sterling really measures like what's going to happen to the British economy. So despite what Boris Johnson and his cabinet may say, the markets look at it differently. They don't like the look of no deal and its impact on the British economy.
It's incredible just that we are on the cusp of this. And I suppose what you have to do is to make sure that you don't commit any faux pas. You don't say anything that could cause a problem because everyone's watching. Maybe you don't tweet anything which could land the whole thing into a crisis.
That's right. And actually, tweeting is just something that lands politicians into a lot of trouble.
Oh, so neat again, lad. Wow. Tippy-tappy.
Yeah.
an old Spurs approach that's gone now, Paul.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, listen, who's top of that for him?
Tweeting, yeah. It's landed a lot of people in trouble. And we saw it again over the past 10 days with Sinn Féin's Brian Stanley. But just looking back a little bit, one person who has some interesting recollections on all of that is Shane Ross. His recently published memoir, In Bed with the Blue Shirts, is a fairly breezy account of his successes and slip-ups when he was Minister for Transport. But a lot of the problems, he says, which occurred for him politically, which he actually partly attributes to him losing his seat, was because of social media. The words that made his blood run cold more than anything else was when one of his senior civil servants would ring him up and say, "Minister, have you been doing your own social media recently?" And on one occasion that happened in 2018, where he decided he'd insert himself into the celebrations after Ireland won the Rugby Grand Slam in 2018. So we rocked up to the Shelburne Hotel and he saw in front of him Rob Kearney and Johnny Sexton, and he asked if he could do a photograph with the pair of them. So they reluctantly got up, they did a photograph with them, and he tweeted it out, but he wrongly labelled the photograph as being Johnny Sexton and Dave Kearney, which gave rise to the famous headline in the Irish Daily Star, "Chilly Wrong Kearney." But he said after that, like people kind of laughed it off at the time, he said after that, when it came to the polls, it was a huge faux pas in terms of being a politician in the Dublin Rathdown constituency, which is a rugby mad constituency. And he put it down to one of the reasons why he lost his seat.
Any tweets ever get you into trouble, Micheál Dhann?
No, not really. But I was thinking about the politicians' inability to ever kind of step back from sports events, isn't it? How it never seems to work well for them, but they are always drawn to it, whether it's Charlie Hockey in 97. And interesting too, Charlie Hockey in 1990 went to Rome for the quarterfinal. And what's interesting about that is that that was meant to be the president's gig. He was meant to go, but he was bumped off it as Charlie went to instead. And interesting too, now that we keep everything neat and seamless here, there could be some mention of that in the state papers when they're released on the final days of December, because it's from 1990. So those 30-year release papers may have reference to that particular diplomatic sporting event.
Sounds fantastic. That's a nice way to end. Thanks very much for listening to RT News' Your Politics podcast. Who knows, next week we could be talking all about Brexit and no deal, or we'd just be able to say, what was all that about? Sure, it was done and dusted and always going to be, and we always knew it was. I'd like to thank Micheál Dhann, our political correspondent, David Murphy, our political assignments editor, and earlier Sandra Hurley of our political staff. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Please do subscribe and leave your comments. We'd love to hear from you. Until next week and another big Brexit week, goodbye.